Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Alrighty, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. I am Greg. We're here in the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And over my shoulder, you can see the awesome medical center right there. I was just looking to see how traffic looks tonight. Don't look too bad out there. It's pretty quiet, but it's been a beautiful day. It's amazing that a week or two ago we had ice and snow, and now today it was mid-70s. It's supposed to be in the 80s next week. So it's going to be an awesome week here. I hope wherever you are at, watching the program tonight, it's nice and warm and toasty there as well. But we have an excellent, excellent program that we want you to, this is one of those that probably, that you need to go ahead and text somebody, call somebody, email them real quick and say, hey, wait, the show's on. You want to listen because the guest we have tonight is going to inspire you, give you some wisdom. You want to have a notepad and an ink pen next to you too. To be able to write down some things, just because we're going to pick inside of her brain of what works, what doesn't work, and how we can process on when terrible things happen to us. Next week, we want to make sure, for the third time by popular demand, we're having Dave Peltzer. We'll be back, the author of that international bestseller that is still in the top best-selling list. Child Called It will be with us, and four or five other books will be with us next Sunday night live. And we're going to have a whole hour on the importance of laughter and comedy and how to deal with that and the importance of that. So that's going to be a good program next Sunday night. And then we have an awesome author the following week. So we have February is going to be a good list of people and guests that's going to be on the program. And we've always said each and every week that if you give us 45 minutes of your Sunday night, we promise that you're going to have something that you can take into your week to be able to use. We don't try to really entertain you. We try to just share with you things that we've gone through, things that we have been called to, how we're helping people when we can, and maybe some wisdom along the way that you can be able to use with your friends, your spouse, your family, your neighbor, your coworker. So, one thing that I was thinking of this week is, I grew up in a home that obviously was masked. When we went out in public, we were known as one of the most solid, loving, caring families. When we got behind those closed doors there in the country of Southern Illinois, it became a different world. It became a different lifestyle. Things were not quite as what it seems. And, family is something that's so important right now. And there's some things that I want to share about the people that's in your life, relationships. And I just want to be really quick because I know our guest tonight has a slew of information. But things that maybe you need to start doing in your friendships, and I always step on my own toes, because true friendship isn't about being there when it's convenient. It's about being there when it's not. That's what true friends really are. And as we enter in this, new month, in the beginning of a new year, maybe it's time in your own life to start freeing yourself from all of the negativity that some people in your life bring. And they literally come in and we allow them, and excuse my French, but we allow them to defecate in our homes, on our desk, in our cars, in our lives, to where there we have to deal with it. A lot of times when we make that choice to allow them in, we don't think we have another choice. But I want to let you know, we need to start surrounding ourselves with people who reflect the person that you want to be. Choose friends whom are proud that you know, people who you admire, people who you love and respect, and people that makes your day a little brighter, that brings a smile to your face, and let go of some of that negativity that some people bring into your life. And it seems like all they want to do is suck life away from you when possibly we need to surround ourselves with people that want to feed us life, feed us laughter, feed us strength, feed us courage, comfort, and caring. And they're going to be there with you through thick and thin. A friend isn't someone who understands your past, but they know it. They don't have to have it all figured out, but they understand what you've gone through in your past. A friend is somebody that also believes in your future, and a friend is somebody that accepts you today as exactly who you are. And I think that's so important in a world right now where there's so much contention, where there's so much division, so much disunity. Wouldn't it be nice to have people in your corner that rally around you? And it seems like, I don't know, this is one of my pet peeves, but when I get on this goofy thing and I look up, just for instance, LinkedIn, are the people that I follow the ones that are telling me all about blowing their own horn? Look how great I am. Look what I'm doing. Hoo to hoo to hoo to hoo. This is who I am. Yada yada. I don't do that. I'm there to make friendships, meet people, get people on the show that have a story. That's how I found our guest tonight, I believe. She'll let us know here just in a second. But I think if it's all about self-promoting, I don't need to be another stepping stone for somebody else to climb over me. I think it's time that if we're on a ladder heading in the right direction, that we turn around and help other people up, that we reach back and grab somebody and say, "Hey, let me help you take another step." And we need to show all those people kindness and respect and accept them for exactly who they are and be willing to encourage them, cheer for them, help them, be there when they're down and out. A real friend, a genuine friend, a true friend are those people that lift you up when no one else has even noticed that you ever fell down. And that's who we need to surround our life with. And I don't know. I've never done this and I have no clue on the Facebook and my LinkedIn how many likes or how many followers I have. I don't know. I don't care. That's not one of the things that I do, because if only 5% of the people that follow me or like me are only going to be there when the times are tough, then I only need those 5%. I think it's time that we rally around and start looking who is in your inner circle. Who's the people that you want in that room when all hell breaks loose? And that's the people that we need to pour our life into. Family, friends, those few that I can probably just fill one hand with that I have true in my life is important in yours, and I know it is in mine too. Now tonight, that was all free of charge. If you want to get involved, there's several different ways for you to be able to get involved. And let me tell you how to do it. You can give right here on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page, and I'm looking at it. We're live and running. If you have a comment or a question on there, feel free to do that. You can text me 832-396-6525. Yes, I'm goofy enough to tell everybody in the world what my cell phone number is. 832-396-6525. Text me, and during the commercial break at the bottom of the hour, I will look at that and share that with our guest. Or you can call in to my awesome friend, one friend that I know I have in this world, TJ or Thomas, call him either one, at the awesome BBS radio station. And that is 888-627-6008. And he will patch you right through to me and our guest. And that's a beautiful segue right into our guest tonight is Toni McKinley. And she has four initials behind her name, LPC-S. We're going to find out what that all means. But she is the executive director of Magdalene House Austin. And she, in her beautiful bio, has the honor of walking alongside those that have experienced sex trafficking. Now, just listen to that line. Go ahead and bring TJ, go ahead and bring so everybody can see Toni and they don't have to keep a focus on my face. But just that line tells me a little bit of her heart. So when you see that, I can see through the fluff. I can see through people that manipulate, but listen to that again. Has the honor of walking alongside those who experienced sex trafficking in their own lives, giving them the support and the empowerment that they need for therapeutic recovery, furthering their education, and entering the workplace to become independent. Right now, I just would stop and applaud. That is the most awesome opening sentence of a bio, Toni, that I have found. She's an author. She is on all kinds of committees. I could Survivor Leader Council, the Texas Human Trafficking Prevention Task Force, the Steering Committee, the Central Texas Coalition Against Trafficking. She was the co-chair of the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges Adversary Committee, and she is probably part of the HEB Supermarket Council. I don't know, but she's on every committee in the state of Texas. But anyway, Toni, welcome to the program tonight, and thank you for sharing a part of your heart when some people just say, "Hey, look at all the things that I've done." Thank you for letting me know just by reading that first line or two who you really are. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. You already almost have me crying
Oh,
listening
my.
to that. And especially coming right off the tails of you talking about friendship, because it just reminded me so much of how I felt as a child, and so alone. And when you're down and you feel like no one's around you and no one's coming to your rescue or to your aid or asking questions to figure out what's going on, and you just feel so alone. And I remember as a child, staring at the wall in my room and praying to God, wondering, are you there? Like no one else seems to be here, but are you there? And it's a very lonely feeling. I don't want any of the women that I work with to feel that ever again. And I know they have, and I know they feel dismissed and not seen at all. And I want them to be seen. I want them to be heard, because when I finally felt that going through my own recovery, it was the most empowering thing that I, just to know, like, I do matter. And it helps you just start taking those steps, one step in front of the other. And then before you know it, you're walking pretty well and pretty stable on your own. And when the women come to Magdalene House who have experienced sex trafficking, they feel very broken. They feel very let down. They feel like no one cares about them. And they're thinking I'm running a scam, right? Because they don't trust me. They just need a roof over their head. They want change, but they're not sure if this place is real, and so it takes a while for them to realize I'm not running a scam. I literally care.
Tony, how difficult is, you said a couple of things I already want to start drilling into. How difficult is it to convince those survivors that need a place of retreat? Because they have probably been hurt, abused, lied to, manipulated by another organization or two. In their path to trying to find somebody that really genuinely cares. Do you find that that's an issue?
Oh yes, it's very difficult. And I start off right off the bat telling them not to trust me. I want to earn their trust. I'm not going to demand it because I'm giving them something, because that's exactly what their trafficker did, and that's how they were manipulated and groomed in the first place and got tricked into this game that he's playing with them. And I'm not going to be a part of that. So I'm okay with them not trusting me, not liking me, not understanding where I'm coming from, thinking I'm a scam. I'm totally okay with it, because I know in the end, if they stick around long enough, that they're going to see through my actions that I'm not like that, that I can be relatively trustworthy. I will never say I'm fully 100% trustworthy. And I always tell them, I kind of joke around. I'm like, because some days I'm hungry. And I just might be hangry that day because I want to eat, and I didn't keep an eye on the clock, and I didn't obey my own self-care rules to take time to eat, and I may pop off on you or something. I don't know. I hope I don't, but I want them to know that, everyone messes up, everyone makes mistakes, and I'm going to make mistakes. I'm like, I may hurt you someday, and I did. I have, There was this funny magnet I saw, and I can't remember what it said, but I thought it was hilarious, and I stuck it on the fridge at Magdalene House and just walked away and forgot about it, thinking everyone would think it was funny. And one of the girls was so offended. She's like, "Who could someone say that? Who put this here?" And I didn't realize for like a week she went around asking the other woman, "Did you stick this here?" Well, she found a copy of it in my desk one day. Because I don't lock my desk, and she was using it, and she was sifting through it, going, what does Tony keep in her desk, And she saw the magnet, and she was just floored. And she came to me, and she's like, "Tony, I need to tell you something. You did something that really upset me. That magnet on the fridge, I felt like it was shaming me." And I was like, "I am so sorry." So, we made up, and that's what I mean. Like, I made something I think is funny. I have to remember that sometimes my self-confidence isn't going to be the same as others. They're in a different journey, or they may read into things differently, right? But that's what I mean by we all make mistakes. I apologize to her, and now we laugh about it, how Tony messed up. And I'm like, I know, I'm human, right? I was totally not being trauma-informed in the moment.
So with the Magdalene House, Austin, obviously it's in Austin.
Yes,
Okay.
Austin, Texas.
And how long has it been established? Did you establish it?
I'm not the founder. It was established in 2016. I came on in 2020. During that time frame, they were just raising money and trying to get a home. And in March of 2020 is when we opened our doors up for the women to come. So I was hired on as the executive director at that, or not, I'm sorry, the community director at that time.
And how many women does it house or
Six.
take care of? So
Yes.
houses six.
Yep. It houses six women at a time. They stay for 2 years.
Wow.
Everything is paid for them. We don't require them to pay us anything. I want them to save any money they make and keep it to buy transportation if they want it, or save up to get their own place. We definitely want them to also save up for that, because our goal is that they will not be vulnerable to being exploited or trafficked ever again when they leave us. And they'll be financially independent. They'll, have some emotional maturity and stability. They have gone through 2 years of intense counseling. They've learned a lot of life skills. Some of them continue to pursue their education. If they don't have their GED, we require them to get that while they're with us, so they at least have that base level when they leave us. And they do professional development classes. We teach them a lot about the workforce, help them write a resume, help them learn how to do job interviews, teach them how to clean. That's a big problem. But we have a lot of fun. We do a little bit of exposure therapy too. So we go out and we have fun. We'll go out at night. We've gone to concerts. We go out to dinner. We're teaching them grounding skills and coping skills, and then going out and using it. What are you going to do when you're at a concert and you smell pot behind you, right? And most of the girls struggle with drugs or alcohol or both. And so then they're seeing alcohol, they're smelling it, they're seeing, we wouldn't take them out there unless they're ready for that. But, and then we talk about it. They think they're going out to have fun, right? And oh, one girl loved Bon Jovi. And I was like, aren't you a little young for that? She's like, I love Bon Jovi and he's at concert. We need to go. And I was like, all right, amazingly, I got someone to buy us all tickets. So we all went to the Bon Jovi talk concert. We're sitting in the nosebleed seats, and people are smoking pot behind us. We went to go get sodas and food, and there was alcohol everywhere, right? And it was interesting on the conversation on the way home, because we didn't talk about like, okay, we're not going to drink and you're going to smell things and you're going to have to resist. We didn't talk about it. We just went and had fun. They brought up the conversation. They're like, oh my gosh, the feeling I had when I saw all the beer as we were walking by it to go get soda, And I was like, let's talk about that. What did it feel like? And they're like, one girl said, I'm so proud of myself. I didn't even want it. I wasn't expecting that at all. So for her, it helped her see the achievement she made with her sobriety for alcohol, And they're like, oh, and what about those people smoking a weed behind us? Man, I'm so glad that's not me anymore. I mean, it was just amazing to see that. And then another girl is like, it was hard for a second because I saw it and I'm like, I miss it. But then I had so much fun and I realized I can have fun without it, So that's what we mean by like exposure therapy. After a certain amount of time, it's like learning how to have fun and not relapse and realize that I'm okay with who I am and how I am in the moment. And I don't need external substances and I don't need other people to tell me I'm fine or tell me I look good. But so, we go out to restaurants and we eat, and they may see someone like, do you think she's being trafficked? Or we go roller skating and they find out, wow, I didn't know adults did this, go, I didn't know there was roller skating for grown-ups, So it's finding different ways to have fun outside of what they've experienced through trafficking. So we have a
What's the average age of the women that are in
So a
Medicaid?
lot of people are surprised by this, but the average age is probably around 32 years old. It's mainly
Wow.
28 to 38 years old of the women, the majority of the women who apply for help, and most of them are literally just coming out from being trafficked. It didn't happen 10 years ago. They're still on the streets. One of them came to us through the FBI and another through Homeland Security, literally just being found on accident. They weren't even during a regular raid. It was like probation violations or drug charges. So it's crazy the amount of women who are older that, because we always think of young kids are the ones that are trafficked, and they are. But everyone seems to forget about there is an older population out there being trafficked, and there's a lot of them. Most of them are between the ages of 28 and 35 or 38 that are applying for Magdalen House.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. With that older age,
Yeah.
does that give us an indication or a possibility that they have been in these situations for more than a recent amount of time that it could be years that they have been in?
Yes, yeah. A lot of them have been in there for years. A lot of them were sexually abused by their parents, and
Yeah.
then it just transitioned to that as an adult, just through the people that they met, right? And they were already vulnerable, and they were already used to that. I mean, some of these girls' parents or fathers are in prison for sexually assaulting them. So yeah, and a lot of them are, were in the CPS system. They were adopted, or they weren't adopted, but they just have a lot of emotional distress because of what happened to them before all the adoption happened, just going from house to house, all these different homes. Some of them they're molested in, some of them they're hurt physically, some of them they're neglected, and some of them are okay, they just don't get along, so they run away, I mean, there's all kinds of stories, but there's always a vulnerability that led to them being trafficked. Some of them had vulnerabilities of school. We have college students who were trafficked because of their college debt, or they lost their home during COVID. That was really common with young women in college. And then they end up being trafficked, through someone they met at the university. So,
Now, when they have gone through this type of trauma in the state of Texas, probably those that have been in foster homes, runaways, think that the statistics are just outlandish, are they not? That they
yeah.
have a tendency to be targets for
Yes.
those people to hook them to bring them into trafficking. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. They're huge targets because there's no stable, that's not a real stable environment that they're living in. So when a trafficker comes along, it's all about manipulation and grooming them to go with them freely. And so this child ends up believing that this is what they wanted because they made the bad decision of going with him, not knowing what was going to happen, and got stuck in it, right? So yeah, it happens a lot.
And what do you see is the when you're dealing with it? Because I'm sure these six women come at separate times. So
Yeah.
there's one leaving, a new one coming in. And do you have a waiting list right
Oh, yeah.
now of?
Yeah, unfortunately, we do. And this is the hard part of my job is, we have over 50 women waiting on our waiting list.
Just in the Austin area or statewide?
Statewide, yeah. They don't
Okay,
come
but
just
they're
one.
looking for your place specifically. 50 women, over 50 women.
Yes. Yeah. It's up to over 50 women right now. I've actually stopped counting after 50. I don't know if it's 60. I don't know. The hardest part is because they fill out an application and they send it in. And then I have to tell them, like, not only do we have a wait list, but you're probably not going to get in. I mean, so we're trying to open up a second home. We bought one just across the street because we do small living community areas, so that the healing can really be authentic and deep and be have a lot of people with eyes on them so they can help them and walk them through their trauma. A lot of people want to be like, I got a 50 acres and we can put 100 women on there and we can get them all off the waiting list. And I'm like, I wish it was that easy, but that would just attract a lot of drug dealers and traffickers. And, there's a whole lot of reasons for why that's not
Yeah.
a good model. We're trying to open up another 6 beds across the street, which just puts a barely a dent in that number. But we've had women when I've told them, like, hey, we'll keep you on the waiting list, but I don't know when I'm going to have an opening. And, they call crying periodically. Some of them do, saying, what did I do wrong? What's wrong with me? Was there something on? They just don't believe you. They're like, they think you're rejecting them. I was like, I literally don't have a bed, and our rooms in our house are small. Our house was built in the 1950s, and I know some people believe that, and actually this is a very trauma-informed way to do this, is every woman should have their own bedroom. But it's a 3-bedroom house, and if we did that, we would only be serving 3 women at a time for 2 years. And I brought that up to the ladies in the house one day for some reason. I can't remember why I had that conversation, and they're like, no, I would love to have my own room, but I know what it's like to be out there. I would rather have a roommate, and have someone with me that so I know that someone else isn't on the street and I'm just hogging this bedroom for myself. And we have 2 to a room and it is a little small, but the women really enjoy each other for the most part. We have a little tiffs here and now and then, but that's normal. And we call ourselves survivor sisters. You know, I'm a
Yeah.
survivor. And our fourth phase is called Sisters for Life. And so we just had a girl graduate a week from yesterday, and we have these little bracelets that say in Morse code, you know, soul sister. And so they're beautiful little bracelets that we give each girl. We gave another one, is graduating, moving out tomorrow, and we gave her one at her party on Friday. But we continue with them after the 2 years. It's not over just because they graduate. We do
Right.
case management for as long as they want it. We don't put no cap on it, no limit on it. And every single woman that has graduated has kept in touch with us. And one of the girls that graduated, you know, about 3 years ago, I think it was now, had a baby, you know, and I get baby pictures like every day. She's our first Magdalene House baby. And she was actually engaged to get married and then got pregnant. So they postponed the marriage and had the baby. And so now, thank goodness, I've experienced with four kids. I'm giving her lots of mommy advice. She
Yeah.
also doesn't have parents to turn to get all this from, you know. And she's struggling with her fiance's family. She's like, they're always telling me what to do and how to raise my kid. I'm like, that's normal. People are going to do that. She's like, I'm like, here's some elevator pitches you can give them when you don't want their advice. And it's a very nice way to say it, right? Teaching her some
Right.
communication skills so she doesn't cut it off with the family. And but
That's good.
it's a lot of fun. So we have some good times together.
Hey, well, we're going to take our commercial break. We're at the bottom of the hour already, just flew by. On the other side of this, Tony, I really want to find out from you with all of your expertise, not only being a survivor and a victor from being that victim, thriver, however everybody has a different way they want to be named in that world. How you deal and some of the biggest obstacles that you have to deal with these women early on. What have you learned from the other places that you have been on council with in the state of Texas? And then I'd like to know, what in the world are you on every television station being interviewed for? Because it seems like every news station wants Tony McKinley to come on and do an interview. At least I'm seeing a lot of pictures of you being on there. But we're going to talk about all that on the other side of this commercial break. It'll be about a minute and 20 seconds. 888-627-6008. Don't leave us. We'll be right back with more for the last segment with Tony McKinley. Hang with us.
Get ready for a life-changing journey from the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come. Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, learning how to turn life's pain into life's power and purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
Welcome back. And yes, this is that book in Hope magazine, but it's called Embracing Your Scars, Learning How to Turn Life's Pain into Life's Power and Purpose. And that better be out by a week from today, because I'm going to Lubbock, Texas, and I have to take 150 copies of it for an entire school district up there that we're doing an all-day training there in Lubbock, Texas, a week from tomorrow, I believe. be driving all that way. I took that, Tony. I don't know if you're familiar with Texas more than I am. I don't say no to anybody when they call me, but I'm starting to look on the map before I say yes.
Yeah.
I just came back from Seminole. I did not know Seminole was almost near the New Mexico line.
Yeah.
It's beyond Lubbock. I'm going back to Lubbock, and that's a long drive.
Yeah. Yeah,
I
I've
did not
driven
know
that drive to
Texas was
Lubbock.
that big until you get in the car, and there's nothing between the, there's when there's not a Buc-ee's every 50 miles, I get really upset. But
Yeah.
anyway, talking about don't let's not talk about my book. Let's talk about yours. Put your book up so everybody can see this. Write this book down.
Ignore the black stripe here. This is my draft, but it is on Amazon. So it's called What Happened to Me, A Trafficking Survivor's Guide to Healing and Empowerment. And you want the one with the butterfly on it, because I have another book up there that's blue and white, but this is the expanded edition. And this is a really great book, not bit it's great for survivors to read. So if you're a survivor and you're watching this, it's a psychoeducational book, and it really teaches people and what happened to them, right? And their story. And so there's my story in here and other survivor sister stories in here that kind of give examples of like, how were you manipulated? How were you groomed? How does that happen in familial trafficking and pimp trafficking and gang trafficking? We cover all of it. I wrote this when I was teaching in the Texas Juvenile Justice Department, a bunch of girls who were trafficked, and they had such different experiences, and all the literature out there was just about pimp trafficking. And so it's difficult to keep their attention when we're doing group work, and they can't relate to that type of trafficking. And so I decided to write a book about it so that we all could learn together about each other's experiences, so you don't get re-exploited in a different way. You understand your survivor sister's way of being trafficked. And then also being a licensed counselor, the therapeutic healing process was very difficult. I didn't have a very experienced trauma-informed counselor when I started counseling. And so I wrote about what to expect, how to find a good counselor. What does EMDR mean? What does it do? Because a lot of women are very scared to do that. They're like, what is this eye movement stuff, hocus pocus, you know? So it prepares them for all of that, so they can have a better healing experience, and so they can understand what happens to you. Because if you understand the 12 steps, the first step in substance abuse recovery is coming out of denial. Well, if I don't understand that I'm trafficked, right, and I think it's all my fault, and I just need to pull it up to my bootstraps because I did it to myself, then what am I going to heal from, right? I have to understand first what happened to me. What is trafficking? How did I get mixed up to this? Why do I believe it's my fault and I chose this, you know? And so that's what we talk about in here. So if you're someone who is a social worker or a counselor or an advocate that works with survivors, this is going to help you really understand what they go through, and what they experience. And so it helps you help them also. It's not for parents to purchase for their teenagers to understand about what trafficking is. That is not this book. And I even say it, if you accidentally do purchase it, it's in the beginning of the book. We talk about how this is not for your kids, and you need to read it before you decide to turn it over to your children. So
When you were traumatized, abused, trafficked, how long did it take you before you recognized, hey, I'm trafficked, I'm being trafficked? Or did you? I mean, it took me literally, if I'm lying, I'm dying. A few years ago, somebody on this radio show told me, Greg, that's what happened to you in your own bedroom at home when I was
Yeah.
telling, well, that happened to me. And I didn't even. Here I am doing this work. I didn't
Yeah.
even put two and two together.
Yeah.
How, did you have
Yeah,
any kind of issue with that?
it kind of came in bits and pieces. It actually wasn't until I was 38 years old when I even decided I needed counseling. I thought pulling it by my bootstraps, I was doing just fine. And I was having these flashbacks as a young child of things that were happening to me. And here I am with my own kids, and I'm in these similar areas in the world where things happened to me that were bad, but and I'm wondering, why isn't this, why, wait a minute, why aren't men talking to my children? Like, why aren't they coming up to my car and asking me how much she is or if she's for sale, you know? So I have these memories of a child being trafficked, you know, familial trafficking, and all of a sudden it's hitting me that that's not normal. And it's weird how it took me having my own kids and those memory coming back, and I'm in the parking lot and I'm walking and no one's complimenting my kids. No one's telling me, oh, your children, no men are coming up saying your children are beautiful. I was like, why isn't that happening? Because that was normal for me. And I started realizing, like, well, of course it's not happening. I'd kick their butt if someone. So why was it okay if that happened to me? So all these pieces just starting to come back together. I still didn't know what trafficking was, right? I still don't understand that's what the term was until somehow I ran into someone making a film about trafficking. I don't even remember how it happened. And I'm listening to this girl's story and I'm like, wait, what? That's what trafficking is? That's what happened to me? That because to me it wasn't prostitution because I didn't get any money and I thought of that as standing out on a corner on the street, which women do that, but that wasn't my story. So I was like, well, that's not what happened to me. And I just considered it, well, I guess it's sexual abuse, but it still felt like something I wanted, right? Because that's what I'm told. So is that sexual abuse? But I'm a kid, so it's so confusing. And that's why I wrote that book, because the women I'm working with in jail were having the same problem. They were like, I chose this. It's my fault. I walked into the room. I'm like, so it's your fault because you walked into the room, right? I had those same thoughts, those same questions. And so you can't heal from this if you're in denial that it happened to you. And you have to understand the tricks, the game, the manipulation that these people did to sell you, to get you to comply. That's why we call it the psychological bondage, right? We see pictures of people chained up or handcuffed. And I'm not saying that never happens, but for most of us, that never happened. So we don't identify ourselves as being trafficked because it's all the bondage is all up in our head.
So in this expanded, and it's a new expanded edition, what happened to me? So it's updated and everything, newly covered, and everything's out on the market now. It just came out. What's a few of the things, because I know writing is so therapeutic. What's a few things when you wrote this initially that you learned that uncovered something in you that you didn't even realize was an issue until you started typing it and thought, whoa, wow. What did you learn from that process of bleeding on the page is like what I like to call it, of your
So
own book.
I think what I've heard other people say, and I've heard it said to me as a child growing up, is your life's not that bad. Other people have it worse. And as I'm laying it out on paper and I'm seeing incident after incident after incident of my life and, what I went through, I was just like, wow, how did I survive? Like it just kind of brought it to reality because it happens incrementally over time. And it's kind of like giving birth. When you give birth, it's very painful, but then you get this beautiful being, right? And you forget about the pain. You have another kid and you're like, why am I doing this again? But it's like you have these moments in your life of hardship and heartache, and then you have good times in your life. It's generally not all horrible and awful my whole life. But you just move on and you keep going forward. The body wants to survive, so it finds reasons to keep moving and keep going. And then it's like, I don't know what to call it, just evil just seems to follow you. I know a lot of people probably can resonate with that because bad things keep happening over and over and over again. It's like you can't get away with it, but you keep surviving and you keep moving on. You keep finding reasons to love, to live, and to survive. And writing this book just made me realize, like, wow, all the lies that were told me that my life wasn't that bad, it was bad. And I keep getting told that by people who read this. They're like, how did you get through this? And I keep getting reminded because I still keep moving on with life and try to be happy, right? And I don't have to try anymore. It used to be harder back then before I got healing. But It was that's I that's probably the biggest takeaway is like it was bad. What happened to me was bad, and what was told to me that it wasn't bad was a lie. And maybe that's how our perpetrators cover it up. It's not that bad.
And what was a couple of the major cornerstones of the rebuilding that was foundational truths for you that you said, hey, wait, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have made it. If it wasn't for that, I would be a mass murderer in prison somewhere because I went off the deep end. What was those a few of those things that built that resilience in you that caused you to overcome and help other people with it?
Well, that's a hard question. I get asked that sometimes, and I do remember my first grade teacher, and I don't know why she did this, if she knew what she was doing or not, but she would come up to me and she would pinch both my cheeks like hard. It felt like she had my whole freaking cheek in there and she was pulling it off my face. But she would get down on my level and she would look in my eyes as she's pinching my cheeks and she would say, "You're such a good little girl," in her old lady voice. To me in first grade, she seemed like she was 100 years old. And I don't know how old she was, but and it seemed like she did that a lot. I don't know if she did it a lot or if I just remember the few times that she did it. But what she did was, now that I know more about the brain and science, is she was waking me up from disassociating. I would have never heard the words that she said, "You're a good little girl," if she would have never woke me up by pinching my cheeks like that. If she would have just walked by and complimented me, it would have went right by me. So I was constantly disassociating in school all the time. It was written on my report cards, daydreaming. I would be so upset that that was on my report card because I didn't know that was happening, right? Kids would make fun of me because my jaw would be dropped and just hanging wide open, but I often wonder, because I'll never forget those words. I haven't forgotten those today. That was first grade. We don't remember much, I don't think, from first grade. That I was a good little girl, and that memory would come back often, that I am good, and that at least she believed I was good. So that's one thing I can think of that gave me resiliency, throughout all of this. I don't remember any other adult pouring into me or investing in me. If they did, maybe I was disassociating and didn't remember it, so I don't know. I know that I would always want to wonder how people were happy. I would watch people all through school, through high school, and even in college, just wondering, how can I experience what they're experiencing? How can I experience their happiness? I don't understand why they do X, Y, and Z, or look this way, or I don't know, what are they thinking? I was just always wanting to feel that in them from what I saw from them, because I didn't feel that inside myself. And so I think maybe curiosity just kind of spurred me on, my own children, wanting them to have a good life and not have a life like my life, spurred me on and kept me going. But I still didn't really know what I was doing. I just knew to do the opposite of what my family did, which was don't hurt them.
Protect them, don't hurt them.
But I still hurt them, I mean, I had my own dysfunction and I didn't understand, a lot of things of raising kids, but I guess I understood enough because they love me.
And when did you decide that, hey, wait, I want to spend the rest of my life helping people that went through and going through the same hell that I just went through in my life?
It was probably a year or less into my own counseling for my own healing. Even though my counselor wasn't that amazing, I was still experiencing healing and joy. And I was like, why isn't everyone doing this? Do they know they can do this? I didn't know I could do this. I didn't even know that I needed it. And the things I was learning, like I'll never forget when my counselor told me, "You just have to say no." And I started laughing at him. I was like, "What do you mean no? We don't get to say no. Like, do you know what happens when you say no?" Because all my times in the past, well, I should say the very few times I tried to fight back, right? I'm still raped, I'm still beat. I'm still cussed at, I'm still told I'm no good. Like that didn't get me anywhere but more pain. And so I stopped saying no, and I did, it became extremely codependent, did everything for anyone, especially those who I felt could possibly hurt me. And I made them happy. And so their lives were great. They had a great life. My life inside was miserable because I'm trying to please everyone because I still feel like I need to protect myself from physical and sexual harm and emotional harm, right? So when he said that, I literally thought he was kidding. I did not know that I could say no. And I was teaching my own kids that they couldn't say no because I thought that was the best way to protect them. And so I remember just going through all these different things you could say of why you could say no. Here's some reasons why. And then the last reason was, and you don't need a reason. And I was like, I don't need a reason. Like I could literally just say no and just leave it there, So I believed my counselor. I started believing him. And so I decided to try it one day. And I was raped that day when I tried it. And I thought, wow, I can't believe this person forced himself on me sexually, and this no didn't work. I was right. It didn't work. And I thought, I'm never going to experience happiness ever, ever in my life. I don't have that same right for some reason. And that morning I woke up and I put on my favorite dress, my favorite pink high heel shoes. I did my hair and my makeup. I put a tiara on my head, and I went to the highest place in Austin, and I was going to jump off the edge and kill myself. I sent a text to my sponsor, some kind of riddle of indirectly saying what I was going to do and where I was going to be. If you know Austin very well, you know where the highest place in Austin is. And I thought, if God loved me enough, this one last time I will be saved if she understands my riddle. And she did. And she called the police, and they came and dragged me off the top of this place. I went to the hospital, and continued my healing journey. But I almost lost it that day because I said no. And it's hard because I want women to know they can say no, but it doesn't mean that people will always respect your boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it doesn't mean that you can't say no. So it was a huge hurdle for me over the years after that to continue to do counseling, to continue to believe that maybe I'm wrong and I can have a better life and I won't be hurt anymore. And it took 7 years, for me to get through this and come to the other side, where I started finally feeling confident. And I just wanted to help other women do the same thing. And so we do talk about that. We do talk about how, even though you're learning to say no, I hope this never happens to you, but there are people that still won't respect your boundaries. And how can you protect yourself? And how can you keep moving forward? And unfortunately, that's a part of life, right? Life keeps coming and hitting us. We don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I tell the women, just because I've got the job of my life that I love, I'm doing what I'm passionate and I love, doesn't mean that I don't still run into hardships. My daughter died. She died in 2022. She was 23 years old. That was the worst thing. I thought I'd been through every hardship in my life that I could ever experience. Like, nothing as bad as what could happen to me can ever happen to me again. I've been through it all, but I hadn't been through that. And that is the worst thing that I've ever experienced. And that was only 2.5 years ago. But I am stronger and I'm healthier, and I wouldn't have been able to handle it if I wasn't. So we need to continue to work on our health, work on our mental health, because bad things are going to continue to happen. Hopefully they don't, but they might. And when they do, you're going to be ready for it. And when they do, it's going to still hurt. but you can overcome it and you can get through it and you can heal from it. And it may hurt for a long time, but I'm doing very, very well. And it doesn't mean that I don't cry still. It doesn't mean I don't get sad, but I can get up every day and keep helping these other ladies and keep taking care of my kids and keep having fun. And that's my goal, is to continue to mourn, to grieve, to cry, to laugh and have fun and see places and do stuff and help other people have the same healing that I got.
Well, that's good. I appreciate you being on tonight. That was awesome. Put your book up one more time. I want everybody to be able to see this. What Happened to Me by Tony McKinley.
Yes.
You can get that on Amazon tonight. I highly recommend it. And Tony, thank you so much for coming on and sharing. If they want to get involved with the Magdalene House, Austin, how can they get a hold of you? What's the best
Yeah.
way?
Just go to magdalenaustin.org, magdalenaustin.org, and there's a volunteer button, there's a contact button. So those actually all go to me. So you can contact me directly that way.
That'd be
We're a
great. If you need to reach
nonprofit.
out to her, if you
Yeah.
want to help, if you want to see how you can get involved, if you want more information about it, please, magdalenaustin.com.
Dot org.
Dot org.
Yep. Dot org.
magdalenaustin.org.
Org. Yep.
Tony, thank you for being on tonight. I sure appreciate it.
So much.
Sorry the hour's up. It just flew by.
All
But
right.
thank you so
Did
much. I appreciate
fly
it. Yeah,
by.
come back and let's do this again, okay?
All right, you got it.
Okay. Thank you so much. Like we do each and every week. We won't be any different than tonight. No matter what you're going through, no matter what life throws at you, no matter if you're zippity-doo-dah in the morning, but by noon you have been blindsided by one of the worst things in your world that has ever happened. I want to let you know, and I think we saw it and heard it tonight through Tony. I know you've heard it through my life and through so many other people's lives, but you heard it in Tony's. No matter what, there's always a reason to hang on to hope and keep on getting up and doing what is right. You know, you don't have to fall off the ledge. You don't have to jump off the highest part of town because there's something for you that you are purposed and designed for. Never give up on hope. And that resilience is inside of you to keep on keeping on. Join us right here next week for another edition of Breaking the Silence, right here, 8 o'clock, live in Houston, Texas. God bless you. Have an awesome week. And never give up. Good night. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.